has joined.
Good morning.
Good morning, Hano.
How are you doing?
I am grateful, alive, and blessed. How about you?
Baruch Hashem. I'm doing well, thank you. Leanne Ra.
Baruch Hashem.
Good morning.
Good morning. So why don't we begin with the L'Shem Yehud? L'Shem Yehud, Kud Shabarichu, Ishkinte, Bidkilu, Urchimu, Utkilu, Utkilu, Urchibu. Le'akta, L'Shem, Yudhe, Bavavhe. Be'yehuda, Shalim, B'Shem, Kol Yisrael. Limud Torah Mitzvah, La'sok Torah Mitzvah. Vayhino Amadunai Elohino Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kananei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kananeihu. Today is definitely the shortest stuff I have ever seen.
Has joined.
Today we will be studying the third Aliyah in Parashah Yitro. It begins with chapter 18, verse 24. And it completes at verse 27. This is a total of four verses. The number four connects to the four worlds and to the four letters of Hashem's name. We will also have some additional Koten words, father-in-law words. Yesterday, we had counted in the first two aliyahs, 11 instances of the word choten being used in the parasha. And we know that there's no reason to the Torah does not add additional words. We always know that Yitro is Moses' father-in-law. So why are we getting all these repetitions? And in this four verses, we'll get an additional two times. For a total of 13 times in the first three aliyot of Yitro, we're connecting to the word father-in-law. And as we discussed yesterday, father-in-law is a connection to the brotherhood of Cain and Abel. That Yitro is the soul of reincarnation of Cain, and Moses is the reincarnation of Abel. And they were making the correction in their lifetimes. And when you look at that, there's 13 times in these first three aliyot that the word father-in-law is used. We know the number 13 always connects to the word echad in Hebrew, which means unity, oneness. And it's just a reinforcement. I shouldn't say just. It is a reinforcement of the concept of brotherhood being the unification tool. We need to realize and live, take into our life the concept that brothers, brotherhood, is the way to unify. We need to perceive every human being as our brother. Verse 24. Vayishma Moshe lekol kotno, wa Vaya Askol Asher Amar. So this is the 12th time in the first three verses, first three aliyot, that Choten is written. Verse 25. Vayivchar Moshe Anshe Chayil Mikol Yisrael Vayiten Otam Rashim Al Ha'am Sare Alafim Sare Meot Sare Chamishim V'sare Asarit Asarot V'shaftu Et Ha'am V'kol Et Hadavar Akashe Yeviun El Moshe V'kol Hadavar Hakaton Yishputuchem. In this verse, the fifth and sixth Hebrew words sound exactly alike, but they're not spelled the same. The first et is ayin tav, and it represents times, or a period of the clock, a period of the calendar. The next word, the sixth word, is et, which is aleph to tav, which is in Hebrew, a grammatical law, for lack of a better term, that says this word that it's connected to, the next word, is a direct object. But we also, from the Zohar,
has joined.
Aleph represents the Shekhinah, which is Malchut, which is manifestation. So let's read verse 27 and complete the reading. Vayishalach Moshe et ha'otno vayelech lo el artso. And so we see that we have Chotno again, or Choten, father-in-law. This is now the 13th time in the three aliyot. You think you have enough emphasis on brothers and brotherhood? You don't, because you don't think, we all don't think, that every human being is our brother. It's not our consciousness. But perhaps after this reading and the emphasis that we learn from 13 times that this word is used in the Torah in these first three aliyot, essentially 27 verses of the chapter 18, which is the three aliyot. So the 27 verses connects to the 27 letters of the alphabet. And the fact that there are 13 times that the word father-in-law, choten in Hebrew, is used as an overemphasis, and that might draw our attention and say, how do we take this consciousness of brotherhood into our life? And we've explained how the last two letters of Choten, Ket, Taf, Nun, the last two letters using the Atbash letter substitution, transforms into Ach, Aleph, Het, which is the word for brother. And we understand it is a connection to the reincarnation and the tikkun of the two souls, Cain and Abel. And we understand the giving of Tzipporah by Yitro to Moshe was a tikkun for the jealousy that Cain experienced and was the cause of his murder of Abel. We also learned that Choten does not have a vav, but it has the vowel that should go on top of the vowel, on the vav. And so we learned that the reason there's a missing vav is to indicate that Choten is incomplete. The relationship of father-in-law is incomplete. Now, we can understand that there's other human beings that are going to get married that are not yet married, and therefore they have a father-in-law. And so maybe we need to have all of the human beings get married and establish the relationships of father-in-laws to understand why the vav is missing, that it's not yet complete. But there's also a relationship between the Sephirot. So what is the father-in-law? The father-in-law is Abba. The father-in-law is Chachma in the Sephirot. With respect to Malchut, the father-in-law is Chachma, which is wisdom. And the wisdom needs to manifest in Malchut. And until that happens, all wisdom, every aspect of Hashem's wisdom manifests in Malchut, in our physical world, in our consciousness. Until that event happens, the vav is missing. Now let's look at the English translations. Feel free to ask any questions that may apply to what I've said in English or in Hebrew. Verse 24. Moses obeyed his father-in-law, and he did all that he said. Do you think Moses would do this to an idol worshiper? Do you think he didn't ask Hashem if he should do this? The answer to both questions is Yitro converted to become a child of Israel. Later on in the book of prophets and in the various writings, we learn of the Kenites, the descendants of Yitro, and that they had converted. They were given cities in the land of Israel. So they definitely were part of the connection, part of the children of Israel. But there's just a lot of discussion from the sages whether Yitro actually converted or he didn't, because as we will see in these four verses, he leaves. And we have Midrashim that explains why he left. But rest assured, Moses would not have accepted what Yitro said without direction from Hashem. And he wouldn't do so if Yitro had not made the conversion. Verse 25. Moses chose men of substance out of all Israel and appointed them as heads of the people. leaders of thousands, leaders of hundreds, leaders of fifties, and leaders of tens. And this is a repetition of what was said in the second Aliyah. So why does it need to be repeated? And we discussed in the second Aliyah that these are four levels, thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. These are the four levels, and they relate to the four letters of Hashem's name. But we also have a teaching about Gematria that the thousands relates to Chokmah, the hundreds relates to Bina, the tens relates to Zeranpin. So what does the fifties relate to? We know there's 50 gates in Bina. But Bina is related to the hundreds. So why is, what's the connection between 50 and 100? You've heard discussed, and this is all my opinion, I haven't heard this from a teacher or read it, but you've all heard me discuss that there are three levels in Bina. There, one's called Tivuna, and I always forget the third ones. But there's these three levels in Bina. And what are the three levels? The relationship between 100, which is a stage of completion, but it's not totally complete, and the relation of the 50 gates of Bina. Verse 26. And they would judge the people at all times. The difficult cases they would bring to Moses, but any minor case they themselves would judge. Verse 27. Moses saw his father-in-law off, and he went away to his land. Why did Yitro return and leave the children of Israel? He had spent his lifetime studying all the different idols and all the systems that those idols used or people used with those idols. And he went back to his land because he had responsibility as being the king of Moab. He went back to his land because this was not his job. It wasn't part of his tikkun. Once it was completed with Moses, there was no need for him to be around. He had other sparks to elevate in the land of Moab. Going back to one comment I did not make in verse 25, Moses chose men of substance out of all Israel and appointed them as heads of the people, etc. But the men of substance was not what Yitro told him to do. He said, look for people who were honest. Look for people who feared God. Look for people who hated bribes. You'll notice the Torah doesn't repeat that. Was it because he found the number of people who could do that? According to the Midrash, he was not able to find people like that. But he still appointed the judges. He still appointed these people to administer justice in the nation. Why would he do that if they could be bribed? If they were human beings who make mistakes, why would he do that? And the Midrash and many other writings explains that the purpose of Moses accepting Yitro's directions, confirmed by Hashem, was that if Moses was the only one who would administer judgments and justice, then people would be intimidated to bring a case before him. Not everyone, but enough people, even if it was only one. He weren't willing to stand in front of Moses and explain their foibles as a human being, that their mistakes as a human being. So that's why the judges were appointed, so that people would bring their cases, which in effect was an acceptance of the manifestation of the Torah and its laws in the nation of the children of Israel. That's the completion of our Aliyah study this morning. Does anybody have any questions?
I do.
Go ahead.
Okay. Since Yitro converted, and he was the king of Midian, right?
Yes, I said Moab earlier, but it's Midian.
Moab.
That's
okay, well, I was thinking Moab, and then I said Midian, but I was thinking on Moab because when you go down the line to get to King David and you get to Ruth and Naomi, then,
right.
Okay, then she was the daughter of a king of Moab, right?
That's what the Midrash says, yes.
Yeah, Ruth and her sister. So, does that make, I guess it doesn't, but the original thinking was that Yitro was the king of Moab, and then that makes Ruth way down the line already converted to Judaism, and is that why it was so easy? I wouldn't say easy, but is that why she already had that teaching, and it would be easier for her to go ahead and convert? So I guess that thinking is wrong if he's the king of Midian instead of Moab.
Correct. It's incorrect, number one. Number two, it's, as you said, it's not easy to convert.
Right.
Number three, the halakha is that a male descendant of Moab may not enter the children of Israel because their nature was not chesed. They would not allow the children of Israel to cross their land. They kept them out. That was an indication that within the nation, the culture was not chesed. But the halakha is that a female descendant of Moab may enter the children of Israel. And that whole discussion of the halakha of descendants of Moab, who can they convert or can they not convert, that whole discussion cast a cloud upon King David's right as a Jewish. Also, if the mistake I made is that Yitro was king of Moab, which is incorrect, it's Midian. But if that mistake was true, you need to realize that according to the Orthodox tradition, that conversion would not follow the patrilineal descent. So unless their mothers converted, they would not be children of Israel.
Right. I didn't think about that. It just came to my mind when you said that he was the king of Moab, and I knew that Ruth was the daughter of a king of Moab. And I thought, well, she'd already had that somewhere along the line. I don't know where she would have been, how many generations down from Yitro.
She would have been approximately 5, but I'm not exact. I didn't count them, so don't quote me on that.
Okay. I'd like to make a comment.
Go ahead.
I always felt like there were several reasons why Ruth converted. One was because she was married to the son of Naomi, and the husband was, they were both Jewish parents, and so I'd like to think that they were observant in the home, even though the husband decided to leave Bethlehem, or where they were from, and so she was exposed to, I'm going to say, Jewish life, okay. And then the second, because of the gematria of her name, ends up totaling to 613. You know, she was only, as a non-Jewish person, tied to the laws of Noah. But then when you do the gematria on her name, it comes out to be 613. Came under the command. So it was
actually
like,
it's 610, but with the kolel for each letter, it becomes 613.
Okay, well, I think it also works with the seven laws of Noah, but I could have forgotten.
I'm sure it does, because the seven laws of Noah do relate to the 613 mitzvot. They're categories of the laws of the 613 mitzvot, if you want to relate them to an overall category. So. But shall we go on to our study of the Perek Shirah today?
Can I make a statement?
Of course, go ahead.
Okay. Earlier you were saying that brotherhood or echad was a way of unity and brotherhood for us to unify and for us to see our brothers, other people as our brother. So I got to thinking about that. I was studying the other day on Tzedakah, and I saw where the prophets in their time had really, really required and demanded that the people of that day keep the mitzvah of justice and social justice, and they were required to do the right thing. In other words, it became more small and in exile into small communities, and instead of doing social justice in a wider way of looking at their brothers and sisters and taking care of giving alms to the poor, it became a smaller little communities where they began to do a more personal mitzvah. And so it kind of lost the meaning of brotherhood and taking care of brother, because it became this little small personal thing. And so when you said earlier about, you know, way of a cod being unity and reinforcement of brotherhood and a brotherly way to unify, that's what we've gotten away from. We've gotten away from the things that the prophets were trying to teach us about a wider scale of social justice and doing Tzedakah, where we have brought it down to this little small, giving $5, $10, $20 or whatever, and we've done our part. So I just kind of saw that whenever you mentioned that.
I appreciate the comment. So let us go to the Derek Chirac, because we're really out of time, but I always like to, you know, make the connection. So I believe it's the 13th paragraph. It's the last paragraph on page 8. It's the 13th paragraph of the chapter 4. Sanu nit omeret leman yizamercha kavod willo yidom Adonai yohe wahe adanu yo yoahe dawanu heyo Elohai leolam odecha. This is a verse from Tehillim. The swallow is saying, so that my soul shall praise you and shall not be silent. Hashem, my Lord or my God, I shall give thanks to you forever. This particular bird is expressing gratitude and praise. The gematria of sinunit, which is this being translated as the swallow, the gematria is 576. And the words in the Torah that connect to that is the word for decade, the word for and apologize, the word for and Naphtali, which is an indication of one of the attributes of the tribe of Naphtali, is appreciation and gratitude. It also is the number and 10, which is the maser, giving of the 10% tithing. It also expresses, through the word poor things, the idea of pity. The word his hair, and one of the connections in the Ari's writings for the Parsha of Yitro is about hair. And stretched out is another word. As a first, or and from the first. So I think you get a sense of why this bird, the swallow, is expressing appreciation and praise. Since we're out of time, are there any other questions? There'll be 3 more classes. The 11 o'clock classes will be the chapter 23 of the book of Joshua, Yehoshua, a deep Zohar at 4:30, and the Ari's essay at 7 o'clock. I wish you all a beautiful afternoon, a beautiful day. Shalom Gadol. Shalom.
Shalom. Shalom Gadol. Thank you, Hanu.
Thank you.
Okay. Shalom Gadol. Have a good day.
Thank you.